Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. And normally we do one podcast a week, but this week with the coronavirus situation and those of you sitting around looking for some content, here we are with another edition of Inside China Basin. Our special guest is Ray Woodson, who is a regular here on thesportsvirus.com. He's been with me for the last couple of years on the Dubs OT Warriors podcast, which right now are on hold. But we're going to talk some baseball with Ray Woodson in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco, right now closed, and the PGA Championship has been postponed. We're not sure about the dates for that or when the course will open, but we'll be sure to get you the information as soon as possible. But here's more about TPC Harding Park. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Ray, thanks a lot for taking the time today, as always. And how are you hanging in there with the coronavirus situation?
Well, where I am, the restrictions are not in place. As you may know, I've been bouncing back and forth between Arizona and California, but I was here in Arizona. I couldn't get back to California, really, and there's no sense in doing that right now. So where we are, they're a little bit behind the curve. The restrictions aren't in place, but we're observing our own sort of self-quarantine, going out very sparingly, and we do go out, we try to avoid the crowds, and I know it's much, much tougher for folks in California, the Bay Area in particular, where I used to live in Santa Clara County. It's a really rough night right now, so I hope everybody's hanging in there, finding some entertainment where they can find it, finding a chance to laugh when they can. That stuff is very important, even in these most serious times, so I'm glad to be talking baseball.
Yeah, you know, the other day I was talking to Jeremy Affeldt. We had him on the podcast, and one of the things we talked about is when you retire from baseball, how do you transition into everyday life, you know, into business or whatever you decide to do? I mean, if you're not going to be a, you know, an analyst, a baseball commentator, you know, how do you transition? And I think this is right now a transition for a lot of people who are not retired. I mean, it kind of feels like you're retired right now if you don't have a job going and you're doing some things. And, you know, you recently went into, I guess we could call it semi-retirement. It's tough mentally, isn't it? I mean, just this transition into where you're not going out to work every day.
Yeah, it's a strange new world. The difference being, of course, was by choice for me. My wife and I had reached a point in our lives where we could do this, but now this is something that has been thrust upon people without their choice, and it's got to be, you know, very jarring, to say the least. I think people are trying to make the best of it for the most part. Some people are kind of going out of pocket, you know, as far as gatherings and things like that, and I guess authorities in some places have had to bring down the hammer. But I think most people understand why we're doing this, how important it is that we do this, and that we continue to do it until the experts say it's safe to continue something close to your normal lives. And, you know, just remember, you're not doing this just to keep yourself from getting sick, but to keep others from being infected as well. And, you know, that other could be a loved one. So, you know, that's I think, the big picture that everybody sees here. It's a strange time. I mean, I lived through the time when JFK was assassinated, and that's kind of what happened for a few days. The country did shut down. That is what happened after 9/11. But this is going to be for the long haul, and I think in California in particular. But I will say this, if you look at the latest numbers, the latest charts, it's starting to work. It may not seem that way, and, you know, for individual cases, I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are hurting right now. There's no doubt about it. But the graph shows that they're starting to flatten the curve, and it has been shown to work. So I hope people can hang in there and understand the big picture.
You know, I was thinking of the baseball analogy, Ray, that it's kind of like when you have an injury, only we don't know how long we're going to be on the injured list. That's usually the first question that everybody asks. I mean, everybody wants to know, you know, let's say Tyler Beede, you know, he had Tommy John surgery. Well, we know he's going to be out for about a year or maybe a little bit more. Or if somebody goes on the DL with a hamstring issue, you know, they're going to be on the DL for whatever it is, a couple of weeks, but hopefully they're back in 2 to 3 weeks. Well, this has been such an unknown that we're sitting here and we just don't know. And we hope that, you know, you come out of this okay, but you don't want to come back too soon. That is kind of the analogy to the injury, that if you come back too soon, then it starts up all over again. So, I mean, I think a lot of us have to be patient.
I think that's a real good analogy. I mean, and not only could you re-aggravate the injury, you could make it worse. That's what we're not sure about. And you know, this is, again, where I listen to the experts, because they have as much information as anybody else on this, more information. But even so, there is an element of the unknown here. So I can't sit here and tell you when baseball is going to start back up, when any kind of sport is going to start back up. We just don't know that. I mean, you know, we just learned that the Olympics are postponed till next year. That should tell you something, right? I mean, you know, they're not going to postpone the Olympics 6 months, obviously, because they're not going to do it in the wintertime. But still, you know, not even thinking about the fall. It's really folly to think about that right now. You just don't know what's going to happen. So it's better to be safe on this. And I think for baseball, it's the same deal. We can talk about, oh, yeah, maybe starting up in May, but it's more likely July, and maybe not even then.
We'll have more with Ray Woodson right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. A reminder that one of our sponsors, Kane's Tire in San Rafael, is remaining open during this unfortunate time. They are practicing social distancing there while being available to the community and providing tire and brake services when necessary. So check out Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Now back to the conversation with Ray Woodson from Tuesday, March the 24th. You know, I'm glad you brought that up about the Olympics, because that really made me think about the baseball timeline, because if you're not going to have an Olympics in July, how are you going to have baseball games before then? So I just wondered at that point, is it even worth it to have a baseball season? I mean, at what point is the cutoff, you know, the point of no return? Is it the All-Star break? Is it a little bit after that? I mean, if you get to August 1st, is it really worth it to still have a baseball season, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm sure there are a lot of people who have a lot of money involved in this who will tell you that it's still worth it, whatever it is, you know, that remains to be seen. I mean, and this is the big battle we're having now, money versus health. It shouldn't have to be either or, but that's the way some people look at it. I think, you know, it's just going to be the devil's in the details. It will just depend on the circumstances at that time. I know there's been some talk of stacking the schedule with doubleheaders. I suppose you could do that. I think if you're going to do that, you're going to have to expand pitching staffs, first of all. But, you know, that's just so far down the road right now. I guess that's one of the things you could do. I heard Mark Shapiro of the Blue Jays mentioning that as a possibility. But if you're starting the season in July, you're not going to get anywhere near a full schedule anyway. So you're just going to have to truncate the schedule and make the best of it. But to be honest with you, Joe, that is so far down the road for me right now. 2 weeks is so far down the road. So I think it's preposterous for people to be talking about getting back to normal and what life is going to be like, when we get over this, when we can't even see the end of that road right now. I'm just, that makes me sound like Debbie Downer. I understand that, but I'm just being realistic here. We gotta fight this thing first as best we can. And when we do that, if we bring everything to the table to fight this virus now, we can reduce the damage long term. And then we can start talking about how we recover. But I don't think, getting back to normal is really going to be the goal at this point. Getting back somewhere near normal, I guess. I guess that's realistic. But I'm not even talking about getting back to normal until we know a lot more. And that's going to take weeks, maybe months.
Well, here's the other part of it. I mean, you can try to get semi back to normal and say, okay, well, we still don't want large gatherings, while we're trying to just recover from this. And if you're going to say that, then there are no sports. I mean, you can't really play sporting events without anybody in the stands. I know they had talked about that for the NCAA tournament, but that didn't last long before they realized, that that's still going to be a problem. You have people who are going to work on it as far as televising it, and that's maybe what Major League Baseball, has thought about. I'm just throwing it out that maybe they've thought about having games without fans, but I don't think that you could do that. I think that's not worth it.
No. I'm not going to totally discount it because I think that's, if they were talking about it with the NCAA and they were talking about it with the Warriors in their last game before that was canceled by the NBA, if they were talking about it then, I think Major League Baseball is going to kick it around at least. But if they're going to have crowds of games, if you're a fan at that point, are you going to have a level of comfort to go out to a game? If you're a player, are you going to have a level of comfort to be back in a locker room? If you're stadium workers, are you going to have a level of comfort being with crowds? That's the X factor, the unknown here. I mean, we're sitting here talking about maybe getting back into the workforce next month. I can tell you right now, most people I know, they don't want no part of that, even though it means financial sacrifice because they're not trusting yet. They won't put themselves in harm's way. Even though the percentages say they'll probably be okay, you're not taking any chances right now. And I think that's, experience tells you that's the wise course of action. So are fans going to be ready to flock back to the stadium? Are players, are workers? I don't know that yet. So I suppose if you end up having games once again, maybe you start out by limiting the crowds. Maybe you observe social distancing at the game. I don't know if that's an economic model that can work out. But that's just something I'm throwing out there. It's going to have to be some sort of compromise, I think, at the outset. I don't think you're going to have 50,000 people back in a stadium just yet. I just don't see that scenario. Seems crazy to me at this point. But I suppose when you do play the games again, maybe you play them at smaller venues. The main thing is to get them on television. And, listen, I miss sports. I miss baseball. I'm sure you do, too. I miss it dearly. We all do. We could really use it right now. And sports has taken us through tough times before, but sports has to be on the sidelines just like everyone else. That's just the reality of the situation. And I'd love to see it back on TV again if you can make it work out safely. But there are going to have to be a lot of compromises, I think, Joe.
I was listening to Buster Olney and his podcast the other day, the Baseball Tonight ESPN podcast, and he was saying, and I kind of agree with him on this, that as far as the Houston Astros are concerned, maybe this situation makes it so that there's not going to be as much booing. And to kind of throw that over to the San Francisco Giants situation, I think that it was going to be tough for Gabe Kapler to win over fans in that first year. I think there's kind of, a lot of people that are still on the Bruce Bochy bandwagon saying, hey, Bruce Bochy was a great manager. I don't know about you, but I think that you'd cut somebody slack in this situation. You'd just be so happy to have baseball back that you wouldn't be worried about that as much. What do you think?
That's way, 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 way down on that list right now. And I think it is for most fans. I mean, I, I've lost my anger over the Houston Astros at this point.
Right.
He talked about something slapping you into reality and giving perspective to everything. I mean, I think that all kind of sorted itself out. I think this is going to be a long buffer period before the transition to a new era for the Giants and, well, for a lot of people. And, you know, I like the fact that the Giants, before they closed things up, they donated some food to veterans groups in the Scottsdale area. That was great. I think that, Gabe Kapler was very understanding of, right before they shut everything down, of why they were doing it. I think it's going to give him and a lot of players, a lot of people in the game, the chance to sit back and reassess things. And, not only just in sports, but in life in general, I think we're all doing that right now. So I just hope that whenever it happens again, and I hope it does happen, again, if it can be done safely, people are going to be able to come back to the park and have a level of comfort. And when they do, I mean, it's going to be wonderful. And, who cares if your team is bad? I didn't know how good the Giants were going to be this year anyway, but who cares? You're right. Seeing baseball again. Bad baseball will be wonderful whenever the time comes. So, I really don't know what it's going to mean for the Giants or any other team in Major League Baseball at this point. It's just thrown everything up into the air and it's floating around right now. We don't know how it's going to land.
Inside China Basin with special guest Ray Woodson continues in just a moment. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower Elite Commercial and Elite Residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your SunPower solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. Well, one of the things I know I was really looking forward to, Ray, and I don't know if it will come to fruition, was the 10-year reunion of the San Francisco Giants from that 2010 World Series title team. So we'll see about whether or not that happens. But when it does, Aubrey Huff is not invited. And I talked to Jeremy Affeldt about that. And I don't know if you saw his comments, but he was talking about how, you don't want to bring too much distraction to the situation. And he understood what the team decided, that they didn't want any more bad publicity. And talking about how, it's just not worth it and how people might react to the person, Aubrey Huff, and not to the team. And I understood what he was saying, especially when he related to Tim Lincecum and how that was the opposite. Because when Tim Lincecum showed up for Bruce Bochy and the celebration they had for him, well, there was just an outpouring of, hey, there's Tim Lincecum, and then it kind of builds up a great momentum for the whole celebration. Well, if you take it on another turn and it's a negative turn, well, then it just ruins the celebration for 2010. And, as far as Huff is concerned, he made a bunch of statements that, were thrown out there that they're out in public that didn't really jive with what the Giants have as far as their values. And so I understand why they didn't invite him. It's a shame that they don't have all their players there. But, I mean, I think he really made a big mistake by what he said on Twitter and on social media.
No, I don't think he should be there. And listen, this is a party. Right? You invite him, it's like inviting the guy who's going to fall into the birthday cake. And nobody's going to be talking about Tim Lincecum. They're going to be talking about the guy who fell into the birthday cake. It's just going to be a scene, and that's not what they want. And listen, this is not because he took a certain political stand or that he's, supporting a certain politician or candidate. It's the way he did it, and it was way out of bounds. And listen, I've defended that guy on the air, doing post-game shows, doing nighttime shows in San Francisco and radio for years, I understood his situation. And, you know, he was dealing with anxiety and other issues and wanted him to get well and wanted to get treatment. And that is, you know, something that I'm glad I did. But this, what the comments he made were indefensible. And so, you know, he's going to go off and look for attention somewhere else. But it's not going to be in the party for the team that, you know, started the great run for the Giants and is so near and dear to everybody's heart. He was a big contributor to that team. And so he's got a ring. He's recognized in the record books with the Giants. But he just can't come to the party.
Yeah, I think we heard what Jeremy Affeldt said about how there are a lot of players with differing opinions. You know, they might be totally different than what one or two or three players agree on or believe in, but it's the way that he made them public, you know, the way he did it, putting it out there, that's different than just maybe whispering it to a teammate in the clubhouse. I mean, it gets a lot more ugly in that situation.
He not only the way he did it, and then he doubles down. And it just, I think they're, I'm going to go out on a limb and say a lot of players don't agree with what he had to say anyway. But again, it's just how he put a negative light on a lot of people and how they have to answer for him, right? And you're asking Jeremy Affeldt, who's on that team, to talk about him. This reminds me of, you know, situations where after a big loss, let's say the closer blows the save and loses the game and doesn't talk to the media afterwards. And I've actually been in the clubhouse for a couple of situations just like that, and other players have to answer for this guy. And that's what's really uncool about it. Everybody's going to have to answer about Aubrey Huff, you know. So it's better that he's just not there. And put the focus on Timmy, put the focus on Jeremy Affeldt, on Juan Uribe, on all the guys, Pat Burrell, who made that season so special. And, you know, out of all the seasons, that's the one that really resonates with me because it was the first time in a while the Giants had been good. And the fact that they got to the World Series and brought it home for San Francisco for the first time, I think that's the one that's going to be near and dear to a lot of Giants fans' hearts forever.
You know, I think I'm going to have to go and find that game on YouTube. Hopefully it's on YouTube. I've been going back, Ray, and I mean, I think a lot of people are watching classic games. I mean, that's what the networks are putting on the air right now. So I went back and watched the 2014 World Series Game 7, Bumgarner coming in, the job that Affeldt did. I mean, that was just tremendous. And then I took it a step further and I went way back and I watched a World Series that is really near and dear to my heart, 1986. I happened to be living in New York at the time and I was rooting for the Mets, to be honest. And 86 World Series, I watched Game 6 and Game 7, Ray, in their entirety on YouTube. I also went back and watched the NLCS from that year, Game 6, which was incredible. I mean, it was fun to go back and see, you know, how the game was played, no shifts. You know, a lot of guys had more of a close stance at the plate. Just a lot of different things that were going on. And even to hear the way Vin Scully called it compared to the way it's called now, the way the telecast was put on, it's really fun. You don't really have time normally to go back and watch these things. But I think now I encourage people, I had a great time just watching it.
Yeah, when I watch those games, I'm wondering, wait a minute, where's the K-zone? What was the launch angle on that home run? Where is all that stuff?
No velocity. You don't know the velocity of the pitch. You have no idea.
Where's my exit velocity, damn it?
Exit, yeah, let alone exit velocity, yeah.
So that's jarring in that regard, watching those old games like that. There's a lot of different things. I thought the pace of the game also at times was much greater back then. You didn't have ESPN airing Red Sox Yankees and people taking 5 minutes outside the batter's box to adjust their batting gloves, knowing they were on TV, knowing that the hyper focus that were on those games. It was a little different as far as the pace too. It was different as far as the batting stances, and you know, aggressiveness was much more rewarded. You didn't have guys taking a whole lot more pitches. I don't think there were a few players who did. I think of Jack Clark and Dewey Evans in particular were good at drawing walks. But also Darrell Evans. But by and large, it was about putting the ball in play and action and speed back in the 80s. That's why you had a team like the Cardinals win in 82. and in 87 as well. So when they took on the Minnesota Twins, of course, they ended up losing that series. But, you know, it's this is what happens in baseball, right? There are eras, there are trends, there are cycles. And we just went through a couple years cycle of incredible power, unprecedented, historical, record-breaking power. Every team had, 160, 170 home runs at least. Even the Giants, I think, last year had about 170 home runs. Yeah, so that just shows you how the year has changed, and you had a team crest 300 home runs in a season for the first time. I've watched the 1978 Bucky Bleepin' Dent game.
I watched it, too, game. Yeah.
it's an all-time classic. It's probably one of the 10 best regular season games ever. And, Mike Torres, who had just won a ring with the Yankees a year before, going up against his old team in Fenway Park. You had Carl Yastrzemski going yard off Ron Guidry at Guidry's peak. I think that was the only homer a lefty hit off Guidry all year, and he just smoked one inside the pesky pole. You had Lou Piniella making a great defensive play in the ninth inning that people don't remember because he couldn't see the ball in the sun, and there was a topspin liner to right field, and somehow he saw where it bounced, and the ball landed in his glove, and he held the runners, I think, second and third. That might have tied the game in the ninth inning. And, of course, the Bucky Dent home run, where he actually had fouled a pitch off his foot just before that. You're wondering if he was even going to get back in the batter's box. But he had a sense, just based on experience, what Torres was going to throw him. He was going to try to go inside again and see if he could foul off his foot again. And he hits it over the wall. And at first he didn't think he could hit it out. And then he saw Carl Yastrzemski crumple in left field, knowing the ball was over the wall. And it's really one of the great baseball games ever. And I just love hearing the players talk about the little idiosyncrasies of the game, things that were going on before the game and afterward that led up to those moments. So that's a big one for me. But, as far as the Giants are concerned, I could rip off the Band-Aid and talk about Game 6 in 2002. I won't.
I don't know if I want to go back and watch that one. Oh.
No. Although Bond's home run in that game was still something to behold. I think that went about 8,000 feet. I think as far as World Series games or postseason games, I'm going to give a couple to you that maybe have been forgotten, but when the Giants finally got to the postseason, and I was there for the final game of the regular season when Jonathan Sanchez beat the Padres, and I was consoling Jerry Coleman after the game, saying, "We'll get him next year." And he said, "Yeah, thanks." Next year? Well, I don't know about that. He knew they blew it because the Padres had lost 10 in a row to start September, remember, to vault the Giants back in the race. And then Sanchez hit a triple to knock home the run, and Buster Posey put the nail in the coffin with the home run. I think it was in the seventh inning. And then they're all going out to, along the warning track and greeting the fans afterwards. It was a great moment. And then they go right to Tim Lincecum at his peak, striking out 14 Braves in game one of the NLDS. Probably the most dominant pitching performance I've ever seen in person. I go back to game four of the NLCS in 2010, which was a great game at AT&T Park. I believe it was capped by a Juan Uribe sacrifice fly late. That was a back-and-forth game. And then, you start talking about the classics, Pablo Sandoval's three-home run game in game one of the 2012 World Series. And I always remember the relay throw in the 2012 series where they nailed the Prince Fielder at the plate.
That was a great execution, yeah.
Yeah, Scooter and Crawford talking about how this is stuff you talk about in spring training, and this is why you line the players up so that if nothing else, the outfielder has the throw going in the right direction, even if the distance. It's almost like you're lining up your putt, but if you don't get the speed, that's okay. You got somebody else to back you up. That's what that's about. And that was one of the plays where the umpire got it right on a very close call. And replay helped confirm that. So, these are all things that kind of start flooding in when I start talking about these classic games involving the Giants in the postseason. Of course, everybody remembers Game 7 in 2014. I was in the studio waiting to do the post-game show, sitting there with Marty Lurie. And, we were saying, if AFL can get through this, they'll go to Bumgarner because this is it, right? And who knows how long he can go, but I think Bruce Bochy is going to, you know, ride with Bum into the sunset if he can, and that's exactly what happened. And don't forget, Michael Morris had a couple of big hits in that game after having a huge home run to tie Game 5 of the NLCS in 2014. So I think that's a lot of memories, maybe too many for one podcast, but I'll throw those out at you just to make people smile, which we all need right now.
What's really cool, Ray, is when you go back and watch it, like you mentioned the Bucky Dent home run, I didn't remember him fouling the ball off his foot, and I didn't remember the trainer coming out with that freeze stuff. So I was cracking up, like, you just don't see that anymore, you know? And I didn't remember when I was watching the 86 World Series that Roger Clemens in Game 6 had a no-hitter going in the fifth inning. It got broken up, but, I mean, he was pitching great. And the managers, they didn't have the quick hook. They were going to go with their horse, you know, like Roger Clemens or Bruce Hurst. They're going deep into the game, even if they get in trouble. And it's just such a different mentality than it is now.
It really is. The big decision for a manager is how long is my starter going to go into the eighth or the ninth inning? Do I give him the ball to go all the way, a la Jack Lawrence in the World Series? It's all about matchups. Now, of course, that's going to change a little bit. With the three-bat rule that's going to be coming up, but you're still going to see a tremendous amount of strategy. You know, that you made me think about the spray the trainer put on Bucky Dent. Chick Hearn, the great Lakers broadcaster, used to call that "Don't Hurt No More." That was the layman term. I think it's ethyl chloride or something like that. It would numb you, so you could go out there and at least hit the ball. I don't know about running, but as it turned out, that didn't need to be an issue for Bucky Dent. And, of course, the Yankees went on to win that World Series that year, even though the Red Sox just had a powerhouse lineup. One of the best teams never to win a World Series, the mid-late 70s version of the Red Sox.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So it's fun to just go back and see. Well, Ray, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it. I'm sure we'll be talking some more baseball soon, even without games. Hopefully we get through this thing. But again, I think everybody has to follow what the governor says as far as in California here, staying inside, and the same around the country. Just follow along until we get through it so that we don't spread the virus. Only spread the good virus, the sports virus.
Yes, listen to the experts. Listen to the experts on this, and hopefully we can get through this and get back whole at some point down the road. In the meantime, get me in the time machine. I'm glad to talk about old baseball games.
That's Ray Woodson, who joins us on a regular basis here on Inside China Basin. We are also doing some webcasting over on YouTube, so check that out on the Sports Virus YouTube channel that we just started up, and we will have regular podcasts here during the coronavirus situation. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on thesportsvirus.com.